Welcome to this bonus episode of The Art of the Exit. I'm Alex Sugg. In our last episode, we went inside the story of Christopher Thomas Knight, otherwise known as the North Pond Hermit. If you haven't yet, I'd suggest you go back and listen to that episode to get the full context of his story. This bonus episode is a portion of our interview with District Attorney Megan Maloney. She was in charge of sentencing Christopher. In this interview, we learn a few key parts to the story. What happened when Christopher was forced to face all of the victims he had been stealing from for 27 years? And what happened when he reconnected with his family after all that time? And lastly, what it's been like for him to try and integrate back into the community and live a normal life. What was something that surprised you the more you learned about Christopher and his story? Maybe from the first time you heard about him and a little bit of the mythology surrounding him to today, what's something that's changed in your perception of him or the story, or what's something that surprised you, or both?
Well, I have been so surprised by the inner strength that he has that kept him going all of these years. And even though there was this wall that prevented him from interacting with people, once that wall came down, that strength kept him going. And he realized, I now have to do this. I have to talk to people. I have to apologize for what I've done. And that he had the ability to do that after not interacting with people for 27 years, I found remarkable.
Yeah.
That was, in particular, as part of his sentence, he had to participate in a restorative justice circle where we had two moderators from the Restorative Justice Institute, and all of the victims who wanted to came to that circle. And Christopher, his defense attorney, wasn't there. I wasn't there. It was just an opportunity for the victims to say how they felt, how his actions impacted them, and for them to ask him questions. And I know from talking with the victims that there were some people who were very angry with him before going to that meeting. And afterwards, their perception had been changed. And they told me it was his willingness to just be so completely open surprised them, to say, yes, you're right. That was wrong of me. Yes. Not, you know, there was no defensiveness. There was no, well, you know, I had to, and you forgot to lock your door. Or, like, there was nothing like that. It was wrong. I am sorry. I'm ashamed of myself. You know, and he just listened to what everyone had to say. He never appeared restless. He didn't try to get it over quickly. He was genuinely present and genuinely attentive. And that surprised people. And I think it is surprising that someone who had so little contact with human beings would have the ability to find that strength within himself and to be able to do that.
Yeah. One thing it seems to me feels a little bit undercovered in the story that I've been curious about is his family. You know, he was gone for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Where can you explain that dynamic? You may not know obviously the ins and outs, but where, for all those years, where did they think he was? Or did they just assume he had passed away? Did they assume he ran away? Was there a search out for him? What was going on with his family for all those years?
So the one thing that I am allowed to say is that they did hire a private investigator to look for him.
Okay.
They did not file a police report because they didn't want the publicity. They're also very private people. But they did hire a private investigator.
Okay.
So they were trying in a way in which they felt comfortable to find him, and they weren't able to find him. His father died while he was, during the 27 years that he was living in the woods, and he never knew if his son was alive or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he ever reconnect with his mom, to our knowledge?
Yes. Yes. I mean, his family was very supportive after he was apprehended, and has been a huge support system for him.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that there's probably so much, you know, depth and just things to be told between all of them. I would be very interested to be a fly on the wall for that. I have one or two more questions for you, Megan. Where is he today? What does life look like for Christopher, you know, in 2019
sure.
today?
So his sentence was he completed 7 months in jail. Then he went into the co-occurring disorders court. He had to report to the court once a week for an entire year. He had to participate in individual counseling and group counseling. He had to do volunteer work, and he had to get a full-time job. So during that time, and he had to have random drug screens, but that was never an issue for him. That's just part of the requirements of the court, but he never, ever had a test that was positive for any drugs. During his time in the court, he promised me before entering that he would follow every single rule that the court laid down, and that he would follow everything that was asked of him on probation afterwards. Because the way that I set up a sentence when someone enters one of our treatment courts is there's a good outcome and a bad outcome. The bad outcome is prison time, and the good outcome is no more jail time, and it can and there can be other components to it as well. So for Christopher, the good outcome still had 2 years of probation after he completed the treatment court to make sure that we kept him on a path where he was never going to burglarize from anyone ever again. He promised me he would follow everything, and you know what? He did. And that's extremely rare. I think we've had one other person able to do that, to go through the treatment court without a single violation. Yeah. Most people, 99.99% have some violations, and we work with them. And as a result of the violation, we'll say there's more volunteer work you have to do, or there's another treatment meeting that you have to go to. But he never had a violation, not a single one. And he told me that he wouldn't. And about halfway through, I reminded him of his promise. And I said, Christopher, I'm so thankful that you've kept your promise. You have complied with the court. And that will show the world that these treatment programs work. So what you're doing is so important. And he looked at me and he said, just because I'm successful doesn't mean these people will be. Which again, it's that absolute honesty. Like, he's
right.
Letting me know exactly what he thinks. So like, okay. And he loved to read. He just loves to read. And so he did all of that. He volunteered. He worked full time.
Can I ask what you don't have to tell me where or anything, but what was he doing for a job?
Well, and the problem is we're such a small town that I don't want him to get hounded at his job.
Yep.
I can say one of the things that he does, because it's in the book that Mike Finkel wrote, The Stranger in the Woods. He does do some work with his brother on cars and fixing cars. Mm. So I can mention that, okay. But he has another position as well. And I'm just worried that people will say, oh, I can figure out where that is.
Right. No, we don't want to put him on the spot or anything, but I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated to think of like being, you know, secluded for 27 years and then all of a sudden being thrown into some office, you know, like that'd be quite the transition, you know?
That's not where he does not work in an office.
Okay.
So he is, but he's doing work that I don't think he loves the work with the cars, but he really likes his brother and likes that it's quiet work. And then he has a great love of reading, and so that's something that is always kind of got him through is his passion for reading. So I think that helps. And so he has now completed the entire co-occurring disorders court and his 2 years on probation. He completed that April of 2018. So it's now been a year since he's had to check in with anyone. It's been over a year since he's had to check in with anyone. And I really don't believe, you know, knock on wood, but I don't believe he'll ever commit another crime. My biggest concern for Christopher is when he gets depressed, he thinks about taking his own life. And that would be my biggest worry, because he talks about that again in the book, which is why I feel comfortable saying it, because it's already in print for millions of people, that he, at his worst moments, he thinks about taking off all of his clothes, walking into the woods, and allowing himself to meet the lady of the night. And so in a Maine winter, if you did that, you would die.
Right.
So that's my biggest concern. But I do know his probation officer very well. And she said that he, again, never a single violation. And far more important, by the time he was finishing up his time on probation with her, he seemed really happy. He had a girlfriend, he was working, and he seemed like life was going well. So that's how I like to think of him, is things continuing to go well for him.
Wow. I have one last question for you, and it might be a little bit loaded, but what was this process like for you? And I'm curious because you are in a very interesting position in this whole story. And I'm curious, like, what was it like for you to have to be, you know, you're faced with this man who slowly but surely you're starting to really actually like. And,
yes.
You know, there's so many, I find your position really kind of challenging, and I find it that it's a strange place to find yourself in when you have to be, you know, the boss calling the shots, and a lot of people want hard justice, other people want freedom. You're finding that this is like a human being to whom you actually enjoy. Explain what it's been like for you.
Well, it was both harder and easier that I had just started. The reason it was harder is because I'd never been faced with a decision like this before. And there was an enormous amount of pressure. And when I looked at the scale of what I was facing, the opinions were all over the map. And the number one opinion that I received from the other DAs was actually, I'll just sentence him to 8 all but 4 or 5 years in prison and 2 years of probation, and this will all be done. So that was the overwhelming advice that I got. You know, he'll agree to it. It'll be done. Just do that. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel right to me. There were others who said, maybe half jokingly, hey, you could get yourself so much attention if you brought these to trial, right? And you try the cases, and you know, this will be a big continuing news story for you. It'll get you right into your next election campaign, because I only had 2 years to serve when I first was elected. Usually it's a 4-year term, but I was elected in the middle of someone's term who became a judge.
Okay.
So I was very quickly going into a new election term. So there was, of course, that I heard that perhaps half in jest, but you hear it.
Sure.
But then the reason it was easy that I just started was because I had just told the public what I was going to do as DA. And I told them I was going to be smart on crime. And the definition of smart on crime is I'm not going to waste your tax dollars by putting people in prison for $45,000 a year when there's a rehabilitation program that costs $26,000 a year that will be more effective, that will work for this person if it's an individual who we believe can successfully complete the program and then not commit crimes into the future. I just finished saying that. And then here I had that individual in front of me. So it for all that there was this range in the end, the only thing that felt right was doing the co-occurring disorders court. And it was actually a little bit stressful because we always take a vote of the team as to whether or not to accept someone into the court. And the thing that I stressed about the most was whether or not the team would vote to accept him, because I wanted that result so much. I just felt like this was the right result. I didn't want to see him go to prison. And thankfully, the team did vote yes. And so he was accepted. And I do think it was the right result, both from the human point of view and from the taxpayer point of view. It's far less expensive and far more successful. He had to sit down with his victims and talk with them in the restorative justice circle. He had to do the entire program. And now he's working and he's paying taxes. So I think that's a win.
Definitely. District Attorney Megan Maloney, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime.
Thank you for listening to The Art of the Exit from Yahoo Finance. Please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed this bonus episode. We'll be back with another new story soon.